Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome back to
Happy Diamond Head, everybody.
Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Under the Radar podcast. We are recording it here December 24th, Christmas Eve, in order so that tonight, when all of you are normally would have been gathered around watching, I don't know, It's a Wonderful Life, whatever, you can instead watch the Hoops HD Under the Radar podcast as a family.
Yes. And it's a great viewing alternative to those who are just, who've seen It's a Wonderful Life of 150 times. What was so wonderful about that guy's life anyway? I mean, there was, he never had, I never once saw him go to a college basketball game.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Talking below us is a picture of the puppet, David Griggs. To my side, well, actually, diagonally down below me is Rocco Mill from Bracketeer.org. And to my side up here, for the first time all season, we've got to welcome back our good friend John Stalica. First of all,
Stalica!
I'm sure if it makes you feel better, Puppet, I'm sure, what's his name, Jimmy Stewart, was probably going to an NYU game back when they were recording It's a Wonderful Life.
That makes me feel
better. Or maybe CCNY. I can't keep them straight.
CCNY, yeah, there we go. No scandals going on there. This is our Under the Radar podcast, though. So let's start. I guess let's start. David, why don't you start us off by telling everybody who is not familiar with the show what Under the Radar means?
The one sentence definition is that it is the 22 regular one-bid leagues. There's no rule, and I want to say this every week, that says these conferences only get one bid. They can absolutely get more, but typically they don't. Let's talk about what Under the Radar isn't. It isn't the five power conferences, which is the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12, or the other five multi-bid leagues, which is the Big East, the Mountain West, the West Coast, the American, and the A-10. Hey, I got them all that time. The other disqualifier, and we don't have anybody yet, although we have a team that's inching closer and closer to it, is if you're ranked in one of the human polls, being the coaches or AP poll, you're not under the radar.
Exactly. You're not under the radar. So like you said, what we really are doing for this show is going through the 22 conferences. At the end of the show, we'll give our top 10 list. But what we like to do is start the show off with a feature conference, which I kind of pick somewhat randomly out of the hat. Sometimes it makes a little bit of sense for each of these shows. And don't even tell you guys beforehand, because I pick it normally about 30 seconds before we start the show. I figured we'd go with you know, one of these single bid conferences here as our feature conference of the day. And let's get the screen share up here. And there it is, the single bid. Oh, wait.
It's the ACC.
Well, there is a single bid conference, but that might not be the right one.
Yeah. Well, when you look at this league, I mean, there is a team that might be inside the bubble here.
Just one.
Yeah, just one.
But in all seriousness, the feature conference, and rightfully so, I think, with what they did this week and what one team particularly did, is the Colonial Athletic Association. And
I'm impressed. Wake Forest was second place in the Colonial
there. For a second.
Yeah, it takes a second for the screens to load. But Rocco, let me start with you. And the week, not of a few of the teams we've been discussing, like James Madison or Charleston or even Towson, but what about the week for Hofstra?
I mean, Hofstra, wow. Clearly a signature moment, going to North Little Rock, Arkansas, and beating Eric Musselman's Arkansas Razorbacks in a game that they pretty much controlled throughout the second half. And that game was pretty cool that it came together anyway. I was able to help schedule that over the off season, and maybe not everybody realizes, but Speedy Claxton, the new Hofstra head coach this year, of course, Hofstra legend as well, played for Eric Musselman and the Golden State Warriors for two seasons out here in the Bay Area. So just really cool that they got the game even scheduled. And Arkansas each year, I think they do one game in North Little Rock, a feature game.
At least one.
Yeah, at least one. So this was that for this year. Maybe they'll have another one later. But for Hofstra to go in and win that game, you know, I think you have to look back at what happened in the season opener against Houston, where they had Houston on the ropes. Ended up falling short in overtime, but that was a game they almost won in regulation. But these guys get up for the big games. They lost by two at Maryland. They had a war with Iona. They fell short. So you can just tell the next time they had a chance, which was this Arkansas game, they were going to make the most of it, and they sure did. It was super impressive. And then not only that, but then Wednesday, a red-hot Monmouth team who leads the nation in true road wins, got a home game against Hofstra. Hofstra went in there and beat them as well. Another really, really impressive win.
I don't think people also realize that just getting to Arkansas was an accomplishment for Hofstra, because the night before their flight got canceled and they were scrambling just to find a commercial flight into Little Rock on the day of the game against Arkansas. So they didn't get their typical shoot around that you'd get at whatever arena was in North Little Rock.
I did not realize it.
Yeah. And I think a couple of things we learned from this week, though. Number one, Rocco, Arkansas is not going to be taking scheduling advice from you ever again. Because you cost them a game. Number two, Monmouth not be playing home games. They should stay on the road, obviously. We'll get to that with Metro Atlantic.
Yeah, but how dangerous is this Hofstra team? Like, they're kind of on a rampage. I think we liked them coming into the year, but they got off to a 1-4 start. Now, all five of those games were true road games, but they only won one of them. But since then, they're 7-1 in their last eight. And their last two at Arkansas, at Monmouth. I don't know if there's enough to get them all the way inside the bubble, but if this team gets the auto bid,
And the thing there, Mr. Griggs, is all five of their losses, even though it's a high number for a mid-major team, they're all on the road. So if you're looking to build a resume, and let's not forget that, and Chad, I'm glad you chose this as the future conference, because the CAA is on the rise. As a conference, they're all the way up to 14th in KenPom, which is kind of normal for about 5 years ago. But in the past 5 years, they've slipped down to around the 20th best league. So the entire league, with the exception of William and Mary, is on the rise right now. And so Hofstra is going to have some more opportunities in conference. And if they can go, you know, something around a 3-loss season in league, I think they have a really good shot.
Especially if they get a decent shot. Yeah, they do have, by net numbers right now, Towson is a top 62. And Towson's been a team that we got to really keep an eye on here as well. They've been playing well. They picked up a nice road win at Navy, a Navy team that have been decent. I mean, they do have a very bad loss to Pitt. You know, that's probably going to be a tier 5 or 6 loss by the end of the day. But there's another team. I mean, Towson hung in there with San Francisco. They hung in there with Monmouth and losing those games. So, and I guess let's bring the whole standings back up here. Stalica, we also have James Madison. We also have Delaware. We also have Charleston. These are teams that we liked heading into the season as well.
Yeah, but hasn't James Madison already scrubbed out the CAA logo from their court yet? And that could be a bit of a problem come March.
Yeah, James Madison obviously is not, we've discussed before, they're not eligible for the Colonial Tournament, short of winning out the rest of the regular season games, which I do not think they're capable of. They're not going to be in the NCAA tournament, but, you know, a CIT bid or a CBI bid or something like that might be in.
They should have taken a page out of VCU's book from, I think it was 2011 or 2012, and just waited until April or May to make their announcement.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm going to see much in terms of upcoming schedules, because there's not going to be many games played for the next several days, other than the games on the Diamond Head. There's nothing, but we see a few there coming in Tuesday through Friday of next week. We're getting into conference play here. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Out of the Wednesday games, I mean, Drexel Charleston should be a really good game. I think the first seven teams in the league are incredibly deep, and then Wilmington just knocked off a decent Campbell team, so maybe they're starting to get healthy and be ready for a competitive run. I just think Wednesday, with the season tipping off, I don't know if we'll record another show by then. This is just going to be a tremendous conference race. There's so many different dynamics. The Towson team you guys mentioned just picked up two unbelievable transfer portal pickups. They were picked eighth. And I think I mentioned the other day on Twitter, like, if we did another vote, some people probably would vote them first. They're just playing so well, and they have a lot of talent. So, there's so many good stories brewing in the league.
Which means I don't think anybody's going to run through this conference to be able to get into the at-large picture. But it's going to be a real fun conference season and a real fun conference tournament when we get there.
Flow Hoops going to make some money this year.
They will.
Assume we get the games in, but we'll see what happens with all that. Let's go through the rest of the leagues, though. Jump back to the America East, where Stalica, let me ask you here. This Vermont team starting to play a little better. A solid home win over Colgate this week.
Well, not so much going on this week, but Vermont's always going to be a perpetual contender right here. And UMass Lowell, not exactly looking like a one-trick pony either after their win at Dayton back in November.
I just realized I've never seen that before. Maine beat the New England Nor'easters. I think it's the first time we've ever seen a when this auto populates that we get the school name. Did you, Griggs, did you know that New England was the Nor'easters?
I did not know New England was there.
Okay.
Is that a state school that just, is funded by the state of New England.
State of New England. And we've got other fun games here. Farmingdale State and Elmira. Maine at Rutgers.
Elmira.
Looks like it's a go for Thursday, at least, though. I think they
pushed that game back to Friday. Yeah, winner gets a bid to the Gator Bowl.
Let's keep things rolling right along here. David, let me ask you about the A-Sun Conference, which should be loading up a second here. It's actually a little bit delayed there. There we go. How about that?
This thing loads a piece at a time.
I don't really know what to say here because, Liberty did not fare very well in the game against Stanford that I thought they were going to win.
I did too. Liberty, again, by A-Sun standards, I think they're really good. Probably still the best team in the conference by the standards of potentially landing on the board in the bubble, like many of us thought, or I thought that they at least had a chance to do. Probably not all the way there. There are some other, a lot of teams, I was expecting more from Eastern Kentucky. I was expecting a little more from Jack State. Lipscomb, certainly after they won at Dayton, you thought they might be off and running. They're 3-8 in D1 opponents. And then a team like Gulf Coast, who I didn't think was going to be good at all this year, looking pretty good.
Actually, and that is, Rocco, Gulf Coast, nice home win over Mercer, but then they kind of give it back with that Canisius overtime loss.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a tough turnaround. They play Mercer Sunday. They got to get up to Buffalo, New York for a game on a Wednesday. just kind of a tough spot. I looked at their roster to see if they had any players from the Buffalo area. Like, why would they schedule this game? Leave the friendly complex. They really didn't. They have one guy from DC and then everybody else is from Florida that plays. So
Buffalo in December. Yes.
Yeah. So I just think that was a tough spot, probably a hard one to get your team fired up to play. Canisius also, we'll talk about them. They had a huge win over Buffalo. So they're just riding a high right now, but I do think in general, the Gulf Coast team is a contender. You know, Kevin Samuel came over from TCU, a high major player and a starter at TCU in previous years. So that was kind of a stunner that he didn't go to another Power Six school and he went to Gulf Coast. They also retained a really good point guard in Tavian Dunn-Martin. So they've got some nice pieces, and I think they will be probably a top four team in the league. And I do think even though Jacksonville State's record isn't the greatest, they did play Alabama really hard last Saturday, lost by 6. They knocked off a really hot FIU team a week ago. And so I think Jacksonville State's going to be tough because, anytime you have and we've talked about this for years, a Ray Harper coach team, especially in conference, and you got him in a new conference, I mean, he's gonna give a lot of coaches fits in this league. And so that's going to give him a nice little edge.
I'm glad you mentioned them. Their next game is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
We've got another Carver Bible College.
In fact, I was going to mention a couple of things. First of all, 15 games coming up over the course of the next week. 10 of the games involved teams of this conference involved non-D1 opponents. So congrats. Hitting those non-D1 teams, including Carver Bible taking the tour of Jacksonville, getting Jacksonville State and Jacksonville on back-to-back nights. There is that Carver Bible schedule there. It's been a little while since they played a game, but.
So the A-Sun, like, nobody gave them the memo that every other league was starting their conference play on December 28th. So they ran out of teams to schedule and they're all playing non-D1s.
Is that a misprint right there? Did Carver Bible finally get a home game against Winthrop?
It was a neutral court game, actually. It was in South Carolina there, but it was not in Winthrop's home building. It was part of
an event. Aggressively negotiated to get that game.
It was actually not in the Winthrop's home building, so it's technically a neutral court game. The big game I was involved in the conference is the Liberty BYU third place game at the Diamond Head coming up on Saturday. And that shocking Stanford versus Vanderbilt final that I know we all picked to happen. Over in the Big Sky Conference, Stalika, here's a conference full of red for the past week.
Yeah, I think we want to focus on the red because even the games that are in blue here, I'm only seeing, two wins against D1 competition. So congratulations, Montana State and Southern Utah, winning another Beehive game.
Yeah, I don't know. There's much to talk about what happened with this conference. I mean, Weber State, you know, I didn't really think they'd beat BYU. I thought they'd be slightly more competitive, but yeah. I still think they are at the top of the conference.
I think so, too. They've lost four in a row, but the four were, granted, and some of them are at home, but you're talking about teams, Utah State, BYU, Fresno. These are teams that are on the bubble or close to it or well inside of it in the case of BYU.
Yeah, I do think it's a disappointment because Weber State does have one of the better home court advantages anywhere you can find in the country. And to have that opportunity to host Utah State, BYU, and Fresno, all three in a row, and to not come within single digits in any of the three, I mean, that's a disappointment. I would have thought a Randy Ray team, they would have either knocked one of those three off or at least had a game or two where it was down to the wire. And they were blown out off the court in all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, it was by halftime, you're like, okay, where are the floor sweepers?
As you can see, nothing but conference games come this week, including Tuesday night's Sacramento State Oregon State game, which at least should be a conference game, I think. The way Oregon State But yeah, conference play starting Thursday after that one last non-conference game, assuming we can get that game in. Rocco, jumping over to the Big South Conference, here's another conference full of red, including, you already mentioned it earlier, Campbell's somewhat disappointing loss to UNC Wilmington.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the league is in a little bit of a rebuilding transitional year, especially with the head coaching change at Winthrop. They've had some mixed results, of course, able to get a win up in Seattle over Washington a few weeks back. But I think as we look forward, this Longwood team's got some talent, and I wouldn't count them out as far as winning the auto bid later on once we get to March. Campbell, clearly good experience. And then Gardner Webb's had some up and downs and even High Point's got a couple decent wins. So, And I think Presbyterian's like the crazy dark horse that's been in more games than anybody could have ever imagined.
Yeah, I got to say, the first of all, Longwood kind of no-showed their Abilene Christian game on Wednesday.
It's a tough trip.
It was a tough trip. But I'm surprised you didn't mention UNC Asheville. Going and beating East Tennessee State this week out of nowhere for me with this team.
Yeah.
Yeah, good call there. That was actually they played Chattanooga twice, lost both times, but then they beat East Tennessee State. So, yeah, it was a really nice home win for UNCA. They're a team that I think we probably had top three preseason in this league. I think they're hitting their stride at the right time.
And this league is down. I mean, it's never been – a strong contender, but two teams in the top 200, three in the top 250. It is, like, as Rocco said, probably destined for the 15 or the 16 line, maybe even the first four. But is the door open for a Longwood, a Presby, some of these teams that are playing better than what they normally do and can knock off, you look at it and Presby might be able to win several games this year.
I like this Presby team to win a few games. I don't know that they're going to steal the auto bid or something like that, but I do have the upcoming schedule. Interesting Norfolk State at Campbell game coming up on Wednesday. And a very interesting week for High Point, a trip to Michigan State, and then Tubby Smith going to Kentucky on Friday. Definitely want to circle that game.
A little bit of a hero's welcome there for him. Yeah, that game was scheduled in his honor. Yeah.
Frankly, I had Converse at Winthrop circled, especially since Converse already lost at USC Upstate earlier in the week.
I thought that Converse was sneakers. Stalica, the Big West Conference. UC Irvine had a tough cross-country trip where they lose a game. I believe they played in Akron to Duquesne and then had their game against Buffalo canceled. But it was a tough week for Irvine.
Yeah, a little bit of a tough week right there. Also, the missed opportunity that you mentioned right here.
And then Hawaii on top of that, Griggs, 0-2. Actually, I don't see the second game on there, but they lost to South Florida last night as well.
Yeah, 0-2 in their own tournament, so not too good. Is it going too far to say that this league's been kind of a disappointment so far? Like, we really liked Santa Barbara coming into the year. We really liked Irvine shortly after the year started. This is a one bid league. I don't even think there's a path if somebody wins out and wins every game by 20, maybe, but that's probably not going to happen.
On top of that, Rocco, the league now has two non-D1 losses. Davis lost earlier this year to Academy of Art. Now Cal State Northridge loses to Bethesda.
I mean, that was mind-blowing, Chad. I mean, this Bethesda team's been on tour around the West all November and December and getting – I mean, just look at their scores. I mean, getting absolutely waxed. They've also played about 12 teams in the non-D1 ranks, and they're 2-10 against them. So if for them to be able to beat any kind of D1 team, I don't care if players were out or not, it's an absolute stunner. But more along the lines of the conference, you know, I do think Irvine did have a tough break out there. That was very disappointing. Might end up doing them in for good, even if they do have a really great Big West performance. I do think they're a very good team. But I do want to say, like, there's some scrappy teams that should be, not factored out for the conference race, like Fullerton and Davis are going to give some teams fits. Riverside is clearly up there. Santa Barbara has been disappointing lately.
Yeah.
And so, we probably have a 5 or 6 team horse race if Hawaii gets healthy. Unfortunately for Hawaii in the Diamond Head, their star center tested positive right before the tournament started. And you can tell that's made a big difference in their two games out there.
Absolutely. Let's keep rolling here. And Rocco, let me stick with you, jump over to Conference USA, where unfortunately it's another country we're seeing a lot of red, although, you know, maybe not as bad. Just because the losses they suffered were not horrible losses, like UAB's loss to West Virginia, Louisiana Tech's loss to LSU, those types of games.
Yeah, Griggs is right. I think UAB has not only showed that they are probably a top 50 team in the country, but I mean, all of their performances have matched that. When they play inferior, the thing I like about UAB is when they play inferior competition, they blow them out of the water. Much like a power conference team would. And they're just loaded with talent and athletes, and they can beat you in waves. And they're going to do that to the bottom half of Conference USA, you'll see. It's a much, much more talented team than last year that was still winning games in various ways last year under Andy Kennedy. The West Virginia loss, that was one where they went cold in the last 5 minutes and had a 8 or 9 point lead late and let it slip away. But the Saturday in general was just a huge day for Conference USA, the biggest day they've had all year, with North Texas going to Wichita and getting a huge win for them, with La Tech and LSU going down to the wire in a neutral court game. Unfortunately, La Tech falls short there. And then you also had Western Kentucky knocking off Louisville in a huge marquee showcase game we talked about on the Hoops HD report. So for the conference to have those four games all on the same day, 2-2, not terrible. They started 2-0. And then I do think for the rest of the year, a couple of teams that have just helping the strength of the league, Middle Tennessee and FIU getting all the wins that they've gotten, really kind of surprising most and showing they won't be pushovers in the league. That's definitely helping the strength of the league.
Yeah. And Griggs, I pulled up here UAB on the left, but North Texas with that Wichita State win, I mean, losses to Buffalo and Miami are not bad losses at all.
No, not at all.
I'm fairly impressed by the North Texas team. I don't know that we're talking bubble, but this is a team that I think could be right there at the end of the day in this league.
I agree. Now, I mean, to get on the bubble, they basically have to win all the rest, or they've got very, very few strikes. But that win at the Roundhouse is a really good win. And they're going to get a lot of credit for that. You look at their losses. Miami might be kind of damaging, but no harm at all in losing at Kansas.
No, not at all. And so we got the upcoming schedule real quick here in CUSA. Should be fleshed up through not much in the next 7 days, as we do start conference play though on Thursday next week. Salika, let's move right over to the Horizon League, which I know is a conference near and dear to your heart, where the big story for the first time all season is Wright State.
Yeah, Wright State has been kind of a snoozer for the first 6 weeks of the year, and then just out of nowhere get a nice win at NC State on the road, although didn't we touch on this earlier? Isn't the ACC been kind of under the radar-ish themselves this year?
It may be more of an indictment on the ACC than anything else. You're right. Cleveland State, I don't believe they even played this past week. I think they were in it's one of the many teams that were in these shutdowns. Yeah. And Oakland, a team that we've been following a lot this year, did not get the win against Michigan State. So I don't know, but it was Michigan State they were playing, which is one of the top teams in the nation.
You're shooting for them. They fired a shot at the moon and missed. Most people would.
Yeah, I can't really fault Oakland for that loss at all. You know, let's see what's going on ahead. Here we go. Thursday, we're going to be starting conference play, hopefully, in this league.
Somewhat winnable road game there for Cleveland State.
Cleveland State is a somewhat winnable road game against probably my current favorite to win our Centenary Award for the worst team in D1, an IUPUI there. This team is horrifically bad.
Yeah.
They do have a win, but it is a non-D1 win.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Griggs, over in the Ivy League, where we saw a whole five games played this past week, including Dartmouth going 0-2. I think they actually went 0-3 in that road trip. Did they lose to Stanford in that
West Coast trip as well? Yeah, very damaging loss to Cal. Oof, that's going to hurt.
But I don't really know if there's anything to talk about other than maybe Harvard with a nice 2-0 week.
Yeah, Harvard it's one of those leagues. It's been hard to measure. I really liked Brown for a minute, and then they kind of let me down. I was big on Harvard coming into the year. Then they kind of had a slow start. Now they're looking a little bit better. Really Cornell with the most impressive record there, but Princeton's done. If you're going to ask me who's impressed me the most so far, it's Princeton, but you just kind of get the feeling that you're not going to get a sense until we start league play.
Well, unless this game happens on Tuesday, Yale is going to St. Mary's. If they pick up that win, that changes the whole dynamic here of where we are in the conference. I mean, other than Harvard at Kansas, it would change the dynamic even more, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, Syracuse lost at home to Colgate, right? So why not Brown on Monday?
And then Brown's going to Maryland, which is a very winnable game on Thursday. So, hey.
Yeah.
And Brown, I think Brown's got some really good athletes.
So they do.
I don't count them out in these types of games.
Yeah.
And of course, we have one of our favorite rivalries coming up on Wednesday, Griggs. New Hampshire at Dartmouth.
Yes.
Will Keggy be there?
He better be. The Granite State War. That is a huge one.
Rocco, the Metro Atlantic Conference, where Iona lost their game against Seton Hall. Not lost in terms of losing the game, but lost the ability to even play the game.
The opportunity
to play the game. They did beat Delaware this week, but maybe a missed opportunity here for Iona, unless they can get something else rescheduled.
Yeah, I know Patino's fighting to get something significant back on the schedule. Seton Hall is probably going to be tough. They have multiple makeup games in their own conference at this point. But I think Iona, the way it stands, is in shape to be inside the bubble. The only bad news they've gotten is Alabama losing to Davidson, because it starts to weaken Alabama. But long-term, I really don't think that's a huge issue. Again, that's just my opinion, because Alabama's going to go into like 20 or 18 rugged SEC games. They'll have a Big 12 challenge game. And by the end of the year, I think Alabama will probably be somewhere around top 10, if not better. They played a brutal schedule. So Iona, that win is like a piece of gold that will help carry them forward. They've got other good wins against Hofstra and Liberty. And now Delaware is not a bad team either. So that's a nice quote-unquote neutral win, even though it was at UBS Arena. So the Gales are loaded. They're top they're 92 in KenPom right now. I think that's just going to keep going up, because once they start blowing out the Niagaras and Quinnipiacs of the world, that tends to help your metrics. So very, very impressed, and this will be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and Sleek on the right there, I've got Monmouth pulled up. This way, you win at Cincinnati, you win at Towson. I don't know that Towson is going to stay a tier one win at the end of the day, but with the loss to Charlotte, that's why the Hofstra loss kind of hurts, because they have no opportunities left other than Iona in conference.
Yeah, even a game like Cincinnati, this one may be hovering a little bit between tier one and tier two, but I think when you factor in the loss against Hofstra, that's probably going to be I think tier two or tier three towards the end of the year. So a bit of a missed opportunity for the Hawks right here.
Yeah. And, you know, I still think it could be a two bid league, but we may need Iona to lose in the conference tournament for it to be a two bid league.
Right.
I don't think that Monmouth, I mean, again, if Monmouth splits with Iona, especially if they do the reverse, the home, the road win exchange program where they both
win the road win exchange program.
Courts.
I mean, Monmouth would be really fun to talk about in the committee room if they get to a point where they're like 24-7 or something, and they have seven true road wins in non-conference play. And all these true road wins, I'm looking at them real quick here, are mostly in the top 200. Those are not easy places to win. One of them is at a very good Towson team. Obviously, one of them is at Cincinnati. I think this could be one of a very intriguing test case study if they have a really good conference season.
Yeah, I mean, the win at Yale could be a conference champion they beat. The win at Pitt is an ACC team, nothing else.
Right.
They won two games in the Buffalo area at Niagara and at Canisius. That must count for something.
Yeah, it's something that a lot of teams haven't been able to do lately. So
yeah.
Well, let's be fair. They avoided a disaster at Pitt.
Yeah, they did.
There's the upcoming schedule. One more non-conference game on Tuesday before we get into conference play next week on Thursday. Stalica in the Mid-American Conference, though, coming up on the screen here. Ohio U, yeah, they only played upstate this week and they won the game, but I still like this team a lot. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm going to be with you on the OU bandwagon. They've got a, what is it, three players that really form the core of their team. That's including former, or I should say one-time OU player and also spent a couple years at Xavier, and that's Jason Carter. He was a bit of a role player for the Musketeers, but now that he's back at his regular skill level at the MAC, he should be one of the star players for the Bobcats going into conference play.
I agree, and Griggs, the team that I think disappointed me this week was over the weekend Buffalo with the loss to Canisius. I know it's a rivalry, but you know, we had been high on this Buffalo team. I'm now kind of looking at them as third, fourth, fifth in the conference, and that's about it.
Yeah, they've been kind of disappointing, especially with what we thought their abilities would be. The Rockets of Toledo making a little bit of noise. I know Marshall isn't anybody that's exactly you're going to hitch your wagon to and say, oh, look, this is a tournament caliber team. But they blew them off the court, won by more than 30 points, and they've been playing well lately. So maybe keep an eye on this Toledo team.
The thing is, I thought Toledo would have taken a step back with Marion Jackson actually transferring to Arizona State during the offseason. But so far, Rockets haven't missed a beat.
Yep.
No, I want to see them pick up some more wins here. They did not schedule the toughest.
They did not.
Well, they have a good strength of schedule at 77, but I just let me pull up their profile here on the right-hand side real quick here.
It isn't loaded with heavyweight.
They kind of filled it with that 100 to 200 type of wins, and not the there's no nothing in tier one or two, but you know, solid but not great wins is I guess what's the best way to put it.
There you go.
Upcoming schedule, we do have conference play starting this week, but Griggs, let me stick with you here for over in the MEAC, where we saw South Carolina State have one of the best weeks we've ever seen non-conference for any MEAC team ever, I would argue.
Getting two,
three wins.
Oh, three. Wow, I missed the other. Yeah, and Charleston Southern, and again, that accounted for, I think, 75% of the league's wins this week. So South Carolina State making quite a bit of noise. I still like this Norfolk State team though.
I'll tell you what, the Rocco, are you going to join me on the South Carolina State bandwagon after you beat Tennessee State at Citadel Charleston Southern neutral?
A little bit. Yeah, I think I have to. They basically won that event. That was the Citadel's event.
Yep.
And they beat them by 17. And then of course followed it up with the win over Charleston Southern. They've got a freshman named TJ Madlock out of Memphis. I think he was a pretty highly recruited guy especially for MEAC standards. And in his freshman campaign, he had 18 against Citadel, 20 against Charleston Southern. And so this is where we're starting to see some of the the impact of Maker going to Howard a couple of years ago, starting to resonate with more and more 3- and 4-star guys going to SWAC and MEAC schools, especially with the significance of the transfer portal for the power schools. A lot of these really good young guys are going to just go into HBCUs and really impact things. And we're seeing that with TJ Madlock right now.
Yeah, I agree with you completely here. Upcoming schedule, that Penn State Wilkes-Barre Morgan State game is off already for Monday, but I think we're getting into, we're not quite into conference play yet either here. Smaller conference, they're going to start later. We mentioned the Norfolk State Campbell game, big rivalry game, South Carolina State at South Carolina.
Watch out.
Red hot South Carolina State team, as we just mentioned. Rocco, over in the Missouri Valley Conference, Loyola Chicago, I don't think they even played this week, but you know they're still inching towards the top 25.
Yeah, they must not have played this week because I totally forgot them on my ballot. So I'm glad you brought them up. Yeah, so Loyola Chicago, clearly a tournament team easily. Their two losses were real tough ones against Michigan State and Auburn down in Atlantis, blew out Arizona State down there, got great road wins. I mean, the DePaul road win is aging really nicely right now. Hopefully, yes, for their sake, that continues. This road win they just got at Vanderbilt in December now looks better. Vandy, of course, going to the Diamond Head Championship game on Christmas Day. And then, in general, their metrics are really awesome, much like last year. They're number 2 in effective field goal percentage, number 4 in 3-point shooting percentage. They have a top 50 defense. And I mean, all in all, they've really been able to maintain a lot of the principles that Porter Moser built there over the years. And Drew Valentine, I mean, just not missing a beat, getting a lot of the guys back, but missing Krutwig. It's just really impressive that that's just become such a stable program. And of course, on their way to the Atlantic 10 in the future.
Yep. And Stalika, Missouri State had been playing well. Then they got to St. Mary's. I didn't expect them to actually win the game, but to lose 75-58, I think they were in the game for a little while at least, but they ended up getting blown out at the end.
Didn't get a chance to check out that game. Okay. I mean, they did get a win at home against Central Arkansas, but could about 90% of D1.
The other team note here, Northern Iowa, a team that we liked heading into the season. They get the road win at Marshall, but then now they're 0-2 and they're playing in the 7th place game in the Diamond.
What a huge disappointment that's
two,
been.
A pair of 2-point losses though. For I mean, they've been in these games. That's the heartbreaking.
Drake's been disappointing. Bradley's been disappointing. Well, I don't know. Missouri State in Northern Iowa.
I'll give a shout out to Bradley. They went down to UTEP to play in the Sun Bowl Invitational. They won that event by beating both Sam Houston and UTEP. So,
yeah.
Yes. Maybe they can roll that into something moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terry Roberts has been a guy for Bradley that's just really stepped up. He was the MVP in both of those games. And Bradley playing so much better. They actually beat Northern Iowa as well in that one conference game they got to play at home. I think they're starting to be definitely a top half Missouri Valley, but maybe even like top 4 or 3 if things break right for them.
No conference play yet this week in the Valley, so we instead are seeing Mount Marty, Missouri Baptist, Midway, Wartburg, and Evangel coming in.
They should have scheduled an ace on the challenge.
They really should have.
I guess Coe College wasn't available this week.
Illinois State at Wisconsin, maybe the one game worth circling, but I don't think the Illinois State has much of a shot in that game.
No. We'll see. Long break for Loyola, almost 2 weeks without playing.
Stalika, yeah. I'm going to go to one of our favorite conferences here.
One of the best.
We got to start by mentioning the fact here that last season, because of COVID, the Northeast Conference cut its conference tournament down to only 4 teams, just the top 4 in it. This year, they just announced yesterday, in fact, that because of COVID, they are expanding their conference tournament this year out to 9 teams. Now, I don't get it. It makes no sense to me, but this is one of the reasons we absolutely love the Northeast Conference. It doesn't need to make sense, does it?
I mean, personally, they probably should have expanded it to 10 and let Mary Mac play, but that's another story.
Well, they're ineligible, right? But so Mary Mac will not be playing.
I don't care if they're
it.
Ineligible. They should still be allowed to participate.
This is year 3 or 4 for them. Are they almost
this through? Is, I think this is year 3.
Okay, yeah.
They did pick up a road win at Maine this week, but you know, when we look at the rest of this conference, I'm still looking at Wagner. Nice road win yesterday at Fairfield. But the only other thing to note here is Fairleigh Dickinson, one of the few teams completely winless in against any competition so far this season. I guess the other thing to note here, and part of that announcement that they're going to let all nine teams in, is that they're one of the few conferences that is going to keep forfeits on the book. It's books. If your team cannot play a game due to COVID, it will go down as a forfeit in the Northeast Conference. And they're kind of saying, well, but we're going to let all nine teams in anyhow, so maybe that quote unquote doesn't matter. And really,
the other thing is that they're going to allow schools to make up the games, but then not count them as conference games. And
no, they can make up the game.
We're going to push for this because that would make the Northeast even better.
Here's one other thing. If both teams are unable to play due to COVID, this is the way it's going to work. They are both going to be accredited with a loss. So we could have more losses than wins overall in the conference, which I really don't know how that works. But
if you have not downloaded the Northeast Conference app, you are just not a true fan. Do it immediately.
Rocco, we are getting into conference play this week, I think, here. Yes, we are.
Wednesday night will be a big one. All games start at 7 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you have 8 screens available.
Yes.
You'll need 5 of them for this league alone. You probably have like 2 or 3 other games you want to keep your eye on.
We absolutely love Northeast Conference.
Oh, God.
The conference is kind of brushed aside so far this season. No more come Wednesday night.
No.
Griggs, over in the Ohio Valley Conference, we still have 2 teams here leading the way. I know Murray State lost, but they lost to Auburn. So big deal. They did beat Chattanooga, by the way.
Right. And it just seems like you kind of go off a cliff. You have Murray, who's on the bubble, Belmont, who I think is inside the bubble, and then you have a bunch of teams that are about 100 miles from the NIT. It's a 2-horse race.
I'd say Moorhead is maybe only 20 miles from the NIT. The rest are 100 miles away, but go ahead.
Okay. But yeah, looking at the two big dogs here, you've got the, you know, Belmont, the win against Iona, which they're going to get a lot of credit for. The win at St. Louis. St. Louis might not be a tournament team, but they're going to win a lot of games at home this year. I think Drake, that one's lost a little bit of its sparkle. Maybe they can get there. But if you look at the losses, LSU, while they got run over, the other two really aren't bad. Ohio hasn't lost at home this year, I don't think, and may not lose at home all year. And then, of course, Dayton, who, depending on the day, over on Murray State side, the East Tennessee State is a little bit of a head scratcher, but they're not bad. And the win at Memphis is good, and the loss at Auburn is basically not even a factor.
Well, at this
both these teams land inside the bubble.
At this point, though, these teams need to roll through conference.
Yeah, they do.
Obviously, they play each other twice coming up January 15th and February 24th. But other than that,
that's the thing. All of it, when you look at the remaining schedules that Chad just so conveniently turned off, that's all landing, like 90% of that's landing right in Tier 4.
Like we said, Moorhead is a top 150, top 125 team. Nobody else is top 200 in this conference.
Yeah.
Stalica, upcoming schedule here. Only a few games, but we do start conference play this week.
Yeah, if I had to look for a notable game right here, maybe Belmont having a bit of a trap at Edwardsville.
Edwardsville a little better than normal. Rocco, I know you may have to jump away here real quick, but you want to make a few comments on the Patriot League before you do?
absolutely. Yeah. So the Patriot League, you know, Navy was a team with a good resume, and then Towson came in and ate their lunch. Unfortunately for Navy, you know, I was watching that game against Towson. One of their star players, or the star player, John Carter, ends up in a boot, went down about 5 minutes into the game. So hopefully for the midshipman, he can get healthy quickly. It may just be an ankle, could be worse. So we'll find out when they take on Holy Cross next week in the conference opener. But Navy's certainly a contender in the league. And then Colgate, you know, they have a bad record, but they've played a pretty good schedule. They took on Vermont, Monmouth, St. John's, and Pitt in their last 4 games. They also lost to Northeastern, Harvard, Cornell, and NC State. So with that win over Syracuse and with a lot of the guys back from last year, I still have a feeling Colgate's the team to beat despite their 4-9 record. And then Boston U, I think, is the third team to mention here. They took Florida State to overtime That was super surprising and impressive. Unfortunately, they lost the game, but they've gotten a lot of other really good wins. They won at George Washington, which is an A-10 program, of course, and then a win at Dartmouth, which, you know, probably doesn't seem like much, but Dartmouth's been really feisty. So Boston U's got some pieces. So I think it's going to be a really tight race. No real dominant team this year, and room for some surprises.
Yeah, I kind of look at it, Marco, this is kind of your thing. If look at the best defensive team. If you look at the metrics right now, Navy far and away the best defensive team.
So
that makes
so
me believe in them. But if you look on the offensive side, nobody else is near Colgate in terms of offensive efficiency either.
That's right.
You know, it may come down to those two teams here. I'm going to schedule just a few here as we're not quite starting conference play until I think maybe Friday or Saturday next week. Yeah. Just a few non-conference games left in here this week. Stalica, over in the SoCon, we've been praising Chattanooga. They had to play Belmont and Murray back-to-back. They go 0-2 in those games. They did bounce back with a decent win over Middle Tennessee, though.
You know, for Chattanooga, I'm still wondering is there going to be a little bit of meat to support that net that's actually going to be along the cut line right there. I mean, that would have really helped to get at least one or two of those wins right there.
Yeah, that would have. But I think, David, we got to talk about two upsets that happened involving this conference, both on the road, both the SEC teams. Samford goes to Ole Miss. East Tennessee State goes to Georgia.
Well, I don't think Rocco wants to talk about it, though.
And Rocco just left.
Yeah, his affection for Ole Miss is just unmatched. He can't take it. This was a game that, if you watched it, that Samford played really well in for about 37 minutes and then sort of like just through Ole Miss really or picking up the intensity or whatever, they were able to kind of get back into the game. And if you watched it, the referees were enjoying the game so much that they felt the need to keep rewatching it on television over and over and over. I swear this was a 2.5 hour game with 40 minutes of it being the refs watching television. It looked like Ole Miss had won at the buzzer when they hit a three, but after 15 minutes or more of review, maybe 30, maybe an hour, it was determined that he did not get the shot off and he was not behind the line.
And I thought it was clear watching it live that he didn't get his shot off in time either. So I don't know why that review took 300 hours to decide. To my naked eye, it looked like it was past the buzzer and really was. But
yeah. But a nice win for Samford, and suddenly a team with a high school coach that we had been very critical of ever really since they made the move to get rid of Scott Padgett. 10-2 overall, a win at Ole Miss, exceeding expectations is an understatement here.
And I think the entire conference, though, now I think Rocco's back with us again. Really, I think this week kind of took, even though we see a lot of red there, the whole conference kind of took a step forward with, you know, Wofford getting a road win, Samford getting that big win, East Tennessee State getting that big win, Chattanooga bouncing back. And I think we're going to be in for a real fun SoCon when we get to league play now.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mercer's still got a good amount of talent as well. You know, Neftali for Alvarez, he hasn't played in the last 4 or 5 games, so they're adjusting to life without him, but I think he's going to be back in the next couple of weeks. And so, yeah, I think we've got a solid 6 or so teams at least. VMI also showing signs of life. They did lose by 7 against Wake, but they were in that game back on December 14th. And before that, they had a 4-game winning streak going themselves. They went up to the Northwest, won a little Northwest title. Portland and Seattle aren't bad teams this year. They won both those way up across the country. So, you're going to have some VMI upset specials again this year, I think. And you've already said, like, the top 4 or 5 are legit.
Nobody likes playing VMI. This league, it's hilarious.
Conference play starts Wednesday. You can circle some of these games. The Samford at Furman, the East Tennessee State at Chattanooga game. Very interesting games coming up right here.
Yeah, they really
conference
are.
Play.
Those are huge.
Stalica, since you have not been with us all season, I'm going to let you take the Southland yourself because I know you've got tons of comments on it.
Well, I mean, my first comment is going to be getting a scorecard, trying to figure out who's still in the Southland right here. I mean,
nobody.
No more SFA, no more. Who knows?
I do have an actual legitimate non-sucky comment. How about TAMU CC? Corpus Christi, awesome. I guess, is – they have been. And they're clearly, I mean, relative to the rest of the league, they're they're a lot better than everybody else. Nichols has had their moments, but like, if I'm counting right, this league has 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 D1 wins. Corpus Christi was seven of them.
Yeah, I mean, they were in that
with Notre Dame.
Notre Dame game. They beat Lamar earlier the week. I agree with you. I think this week showed me that maybe Corpus Christi wasn't just a fraud based on their schedule, that they really do have something here.
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah, and the Islanders, you know, first year head coach Steve Lutz came from Purdue, has installed the Purdue system, and you can just see, like, just look at their schedule. Game after game, they slowly get better and better and better each time out. You go back to like the third game of the year, they played that terrible IUPUI team. They only beat them by six. You know, if they played again, they beat them by 40, right? So,
yeah,
this is just a really fun project to see develop. They're led by a JUCO transfer, Isaac Mushila, and they just found players and fit them into Purdue's system. And credit to Steve Lutz. I mean, he's doing one of the best coaching jobs anywhere you can find.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule, Nichols, who was our preseason pick, is at Purdue, a little over their heads, but
way over their head. Yeah.
Incarnate Word, who is very, very bad, is at Texas. Corpus Christi hosting Sol Ross State.
Howard Payne and Letourneau were not available.
Yeah. I guess not. Sleeka, let me punish you again. How about the SWAC, which picked up one and only one D1 win, although it was a road win at Kent State for Southern.
Well, it was kind of a nice win for the Jaguars right here. I think I'd have to go back in the books. I think this might have been their first win against an Ohio team since they won against Dayton back in the mid-90s, back when they had, Bobby Phils. But again, that'll be a deep dive for another day.
Well, they actually hung with Dayton then on Tuesday. And and Rocco, I'm now looking at the Southern as maybe the team to be in this conference.
I mean, they certainly could be. They've also won at Tulane earlier in the year. And obviously, like most SWAC schools, they've taken on a brutal schedule. They only lost by three against South Dakota. That's probably one they want back. But yeah, there's some talent on this team, you know, a lot like the MEAC schools that are improving. The talent is rising in a lot of these programs. Jackson State's also another team that's given teams fits. And they have one of the best rebounders in the country in McInnes. And so, even if you go all the way down to the bottom, Mississippi Valley State is not as terrible as previous years. They've lost all 10 games, but, you know, they actually only lost by five to Arkansas State. They might be better than IUPUI.
I like Southern and Texas Southern, and I haven't seen anything else that leads me to believe that anybody can really stay with those two over the course of an entire season.
Yeah, we've got a bunch more. We've got more bye games this week. No conference play yet in this league. A few teams going to be able to cash in some paychecks.
Yeah.
I will say that Prairie View belongs probably in the conversation. They're 0-10, but they haven't played anybody outside the top 122. Eight of those 10 games are in the top 100. And then the other two are Grand Canyon and Loyola Marymount. So, and they've got a bunch of single-digit losses in those games. So Prairie View, I think, is still in the mix.
All right, fair enough. Griggs, over in the Summit League, South Dakota State started off conference play 2-0, picking up wins over both Kansas City and Oral Roberts. The Oral Roberts game, a fun game, a close game.
It was. Kansas City, we've talked about. We've kind of been disappointed in them given what we thought their potential were, but South Dakota State just blew them to the moon and then beat an Oral Roberts team, which, you know, also has disappointed us given how strongly they finished the season and everything they had coming back. But while those teams have been disappointing, those are still two teams with really high ceilings, and South Dakota State beating both of them. I know you like North Dakota State a little bit. I have not seen anything that leads me to think anybody can stay with South Dakota State over the course of a double round robin season. The surprise team, though, isn't them. It's the Leathernecks. But
they went to Omaha.
Yeah. And lost. And and you just hate that they just woke up and realized, oh crap, we're Western Illinois, aren't we?
Western Illinois, we've been singing their praises all season, Rocco. They go to Omaha and lose, and they almost lost to Denver on top of that. Probably the easiest road trip in conference play.
In college basketball.
Well, you know, in traditional speak and the way Omaha started, it is a very bad loss. I think they, you know, a good team would find a way to win that despite all the challenges. I do think there's something to be said about trying to play three games in 5 days, especially with the travel. You go to Denver in the altitude, you come out of the altitude and you got to turn around less than 48 hours and play Omaha. So I get it from a scheduling standpoint. That's a tough spot, but Omaha is like, you know, 336 in the country. You got to find a way to get that win no matter what. And they didn't. So that's unfortunate because it's been a great story. Now, Western Illinois, they get a chance to get their legs back over the holidays. Next Wednesday, they'll play at Iowa. So if they hang with Iowa and make that interesting, because Iowa's extremely athletic, they score at a high rate. I think I'll be believing again, because I think that would give them a lot of confidence heading back into Summit League play.
Quick shout out here to the St. Thomas Tommies, our newest D1 team. Wins at Omaha, which Western Illinois can do, and only lost by one at Denver.
How about the Tommies winning four D1 games is basically a transitional D3 team? That is astoundingly good. I don't mean that as a backhanded compliment. These are kids that weren't offered D2 scholarships.
Here's an upcoming schedule, including that Western Illinois Iowa game. But Stalica over in the Sun Belt Conference, a couple of leagues left to go here. No conference play yet, and actually more blue than red for as a rarity this past week from some of these other conferences. Although a lot of non D1 stuff there too.
But still, we still have some gaudy records at the top, thanks to Texas State and South Alabama, who may be looking kind of maybe 13 or 14 seedish if they're able to win the conference this year.
Yeah, and David, you know, Georgia State did lose to Georgia Tech only by 10. Texas State got crushed by Houston.
He went in overtime, though.
Texas State got crushed by Houston. They didn't show me much of that game. But you know, Georgia State showed me a little bit, and South Alabama, obviously, is like a real good team here as well.
Yeah, what I look at, and I'll kind of defer to Rocco here, is a lot of decent teams that are sort of evenly matched. I don't see anybody really at all that I think, oh, they're definitely going to run away with this, or they should run away with it. I could see it being one of those situations to where you have six or seven teams separated by like four or five games at the end of the year.
I would agree. Yeah, I think the conference, especially the way the schedule model with travel partners, two games a week, either home or away, there's just going to be a lot of, you know, jockeying for position throughout the next couple months. You know, we've got another kind of surprising team, the Louisiana Monroe Warhawks, who are on a six-game winning streak, which includes a really good road win at Stephen F. Austin. Credit to Keith Richard in that program, really getting things going. And if you look at their losses, their losses are LSU, Auburn, Louisiana Tech, and SMU. I mean, nothing to bat your eye at all in the resume. So just another team to throw into the mix as a contender, as you said there, Mr. Griggs. And I think, you know, the floor is pretty high with the exception of maybe Little Rock. But even Troy got a nice little road win at Mercer over the last couple of days. So Sun Belt is very balanced, as you said, Chad.
Yeah, and it's doing a really good job of getting those max four non D1 games, all these teams. So, got to give a shout out to them.
Yeah. Do better, guys. Come on.
Yeah, the non conference scheduling is a little, has something to be said for it here in this league. We do start conference play, though, this week here coming up next Thursday. Last of our regular conferences here, at least, is the WAC. And Rocco, let me stick with you and let's talk about New Mexico State. You know, I think this team is ready to is starting to show me that they're there.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, they're on a six game win streak if you count the non D1 games this week. But obviously the road win at Washington State was gutsy. The road win at Loyola Marymount, they got revenge on New Mexico in overtime on a buzzer beater, and they got the sweep over UTEP, which is not easy. And so the only losses, the home loss to New Mexico hurts. The neutral loss to Utah State is completely fine at this point, besides the fact that it was by 27, thanks to some hot Aggie shooting. But in general, I think these Aggies from New Mexico State are definitely the favorite and a lot of talent. I do want to say, though, the WAC you know, probably the first six or seven teams in the league, those are not going to be easy road wins for anybody, even New Mexico State. Grand Canyon got a huge win in a defensive, you know, put San Francisco in a blender and beat them 49-48. And that's a big win for this league. Abilene Christian didn't get the scheduling opportunities, but every other game they're playing, they played some decent teams at home like Drexel and Longwood, just blew them out of the water. They got a lot of pieces back. They're really standing out to me. And Utah Valley's got the best rebounder, not named Oscar Tshiebwe, in the country. So this is a fun league.
Yeah. Look at that. There's Grand Canyon on the right.
You know, a little too much fluff. Like, Grand Canyon, great arena, great atmosphere, great place. And who doesn't love going to the bakery every day? But come on, we've got to schedule a little tougher than this. As good as this team is, I think that good under the radar programs need to start thinking of how can we get ourselves on the bubble or inside the bubble. And I put Grand Canyon in that category. This is not how you schedule.
Yeah, this is, you know, they have three SWAC teams there, a pathetically bad Texas San Antonio team, two non-D1 games. Yes, road trips.
So make a case for that.
Road trips for Pepperdine and Loyola Marymount are solid. But
yeah, you're their advocate, Rocco, or I am, and you're the – make a case for that. I can't.
I get it. Well, they got a big budget to buy a lot of these, you know, SWAC teams and North Florida and all those. But the thing I do give them credit for, they went and found – before the season started, most forecasters had Loyola Marymount as a bubble team, and they got that game on the road. Unfortunately, Loyola Marymount didn't turn out to be a bubble team in the end, but that's a nice road win. The San Francisco game came together late, and they played it over in, you know, the NBA arena, and they get the win. I mean, that kind of legitimizes them. Obviously, the home loss to Wyoming hurts. But yeah, you're right in general. Like in the future, it'd be great to see them take on more of like a Towson type of schedule or a South Dakota State type of schedule even more. Right. And I'm with you on that.
Just to put this in the context, out of the 250-ish, 60-ish under the radar teams, 240 are not in the category that I would put Grand Canyon in. I'm not knocking. I know it's hard to get games. You got to get games that are competitive. But if you believe yourself to be a top under the radar program that is gunning for the bubble, you have to go out and play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've got, they're a lot different because they actually have quite a bit of money. So,
right. Yeah.
To buy these games. Right.
There's the upcoming schedule for this week, New Mexico State trip to Seattle. That's probably the game we're circling here among these games. Grand Canyon is going to be hosting Chicago State. Abilene Christian at Utah Valley could be a good one as well. That completes all 22 conferences, but Sligo, we got a couple more conferences to take a quick look at. I know you want to welcome back the Front Range now that you're here. So how are things going in the Front Range?
Well, we haven't seen too many changes, at least in terms of conference play right here. Although Colorado State, now that they're a top 25 team, we shouldn't really be mentioning them on under the radar.
Yeah, all Front Range teams get under the radar. Yes.
Yeah.
But we do have it in our mythical Front Range conference. I don't know that we. Oh, do we have a conference game here? No, we don't.
Only if we extend all the Front Range south to New Mexico.
That's the back range. Isn't it? Mm-hmm.
You have a Beehive versus Front Range game.
We do have the Beehive versus Front Range, and so we should also mention the Beehive conference here. Quick check in our standings: is BYU leading the way here, off of their win at Weber State, that they now have the lead among Front Range games. So congrats to them. They did not fare well against Vandy last night, but I think we do have a Beehive game coming up this week. So we're going to want to circle there.
We've got Utah. Oh, wait, that's, yeah.
No, we don't.
We don't.
What?
Oh, I thought we had one on the schedule. Oh, well, no Beehive games this week. Sorry, guys.
Well, why is Utah playing an out-of-conference game at Oregon State?
Weber State got lost in the Beehive this last week.
Yeah, Weber State, a little disappointed Beehive. We all know that if you win the Beehive conference, you win the old ochre bucket.
The old ochre bucket.
Top 10 list. Top 10 list. Here we go. Our top 10 list for December 24th, Christmas Eve. We're going to start with some honorable mentions. Teams that did not quite make their top 10. Louisiana Tech, Chattanooga dropping out of the top 10. North Texas, Grand Canyon, South Dakota State, Irvine, and Vermont, all getting at least a little bit of love from us.
Yeah.
But here's our top 10. Number 10, Hofstra off of that.
Love the vote. I didn't vote for them and should have. So glad to see them make it. I would have voted them 10th, but I would have voted for them.
Oakland, despite losing to Michigan State, still hanging around in our top 10.
Yeah, good job.
And number 8, we've got Ohio out of the MAC there. Number 7, Monmouth, despite the loss.
Still like them.
How are they above Hofstra if they lost to Hofstra? You know?
They won at Cincinnati.
I think Hofstra's a better team than Cincinnati.
You might be correct.
Arkansas beat Cincinnati.
Just take them off the board.
Number 6, New Mexico State coming in.
Yeah.
Red hot team out of the WAC we discussed. UAB at 5.
Yeah.
Murray State, one of the two
all the
teams
way up to number 4.
Up to number 4. The Ohio Valley, they're not even the best OVC team. Number 3, we've got Belmont.
All the way up to 3. And you're starting to talk about teams that are on the bubble or inside of it once you get around 4 now, I think.
I don't think it's going to be a surprise who the top two teams are. Number 2, the Iona Gales, and number 1.
Yeah.
For now, at least, until they move into the top 25, Loyola Chicago.
Yeah, Loyola might be out of there soon via being ranked in the human poll.
Let's pull this down, though, and go to any other final thoughts. Sleeka, let me start with you.
Not really under the radar, but we have to give a birthday shout-out to a couple college luminaries like Jay Wright and Jay Billis. So it's nice to share a birthday with them. So congratulations and enjoy your Christmas holiday.
Oh, wait. Today is your birthday, isn't it, Stalika?
Yep.
Yeah, I knew that when we were at Xavier. Man, happy birthday. I forgot that. Yeah.
And so we got to give a happy birthday shout out to Stalika for your birthday present. You can, instead of unwrapping Christmas presents, you can watch the replay of the Under the Radar podcast we just recorded.
And the Diamond Head.
And the Diamond Head. Rocco.
Well, happy birthday, John. That's exciting. Very cool to be on the show with you on the same day as your birthday. I would just like to say that, a couple factors in play as we go forward. I feel like we're at this moment where we're on a few days off of no games, chance to reflect, relax, and we'll get right into conference play next week. So the conference races are going to be so exciting, as we just talked about, but also just the whole fact of trying to get games rescheduled, trying to get in front of a lot of the inevitability of positive cases that are going to continue to possibly spike. However, some good signs abroad that some of the spread is slowing down out there. Maybe they'll hopefully come into play here in the next few weeks, but hopefully everybody stays safe and healthy and the leagues can navigate this in the right way to get the games played. And for the games that are on schedule, one that's kind of really floating under the radar, I think, in the MAC, we have Akron and Bowling Green coming up on Wednesday. Both teams on 5-game win streaks. Bowling Green finally healthy. Their win streak includes a win over that good Oakland team we talked about. So I think that's kind of a sneaky, really good MAC opener. Keep your eye on that.
Good one. Good one to keep an eye on. Absolutely. Greg, do you want to finish off our holiday special show here?
Yes, it is. And to kind of piggyback off of what Rocco just said, this time of year, regardless of what holiday or religion or whether it's Festivus or Christmas or Hanukkah, it's important to just remember what's really important. And what's really important this time of year is the Diamond Head Classic. It's a quadruple header. We've got a quadrupler. You know how much it would be better if it was a quintuple header. But they need a bonus game out there so we can have 5 games on Christmas Day. But, I do wish everybody a safe and happy holiday. I hope you're able to enjoy whatever it is you're doing. If you're among the people that are not able to, and I know there's a lot of people watching and that either are or aren't watching that aren't. Sometimes the holidays, you can't get away. Sometimes you can't be with the people you want to be with. Sometimes it's a reminder of things that you don't have anymore or never had in the first place. I get it. The holidays are great for some people and they suck for others. If it sucks for you, turn on the Diamond Head, tweet at us. We'll be watching.
And rewatch this podcast another time if you really need something to do. Absolutely. Right. Or you can watch our Hoops HD report from earlier the week. But on that note, I do want to wish everybody a happy holidays, happy new year, et cetera. Happy Festivus, happy birthday. On behalf of David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Stalika, the birthday boy, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again real soon.